Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Today, the novelist and political activist Arundhati Roy. Also, we'll look at the kind of weird business story that came out on Friday that Amazon will acquire Whole Foods, two sellers who many of you probably use a lot but also love to hate. Is this good or bad for consumers? Good or bad for workers? And what is the biggest virtual marketplace in the world want with something so bricks and mortar as a supermarket chain? We'll get into that at 10:30. And we'll keep doing segments on both the Trump and Russia investigations and not get distracted from the policy moves coming out of Washington. Today, after the retightening of Cuba restrictions, we'll look at the administration's strange brew of sanctions or easing sanctions, ripping Cuba for human rights violations while dancing with the Saudi sheikhs and things like that. And we begin with today's edition of Trusha Daily, in which we're following the Trump world and Russia investigations on every show for the month of June. Then we'll see where we are come July and if we need that. Back with us today is veteran investigative reporter Michael Isikoff, these days the chief investigative correspondent for Yahoo News. Hi, Michael. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey there. Good to be with you.
Let's start with the matter of the president himself tweeting that he is under investigation on Friday and then his lawyer denying it on Sunday. The Friday tweet said, "I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director, witch hunt." So yes, under investigation, right from the president's mouth or typing fingers. And then his attorney, Jay Sekulow, denied but then confused the issue, saying he was and wasn't under investigation in this exchange with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday. First, the lawyer said the president is not under investigation. Then,
"And now he's being investigated by the Department of Justice because the special counsel under the special counsel regulations reports still to the Department of Justice, not an independent counsel. So he's being investigated for taking the action that the Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General recommended him to take by the agency who recommended the termination. So that's the constitutional threshold question here. That's why, investigation.
What's the question? You've stated some facts. First of all, you've now said that he is being investigated after saying that you didn't.
No.
You just said that he's being investigated.
No, Chris, I said that the let me be crystal clear so you completely understand. We have not received nor are we aware of any investigation of the President of the United States.
Sir, you just said two times that he's being investigated.
So, Michael Isikoff, can you be a Sekulow to English dictionary and translate that for us?
Well, what was confusing about that? Wasn't it crystal clear to you? Jay Sekulow is sort of, I assume here, or seems to be just harping on the fact that he hasn't been informed, officially informed, that the president is under investigation. And that's normally the way it would work, not unless the special counsel was preparing to indict his client. Jay Sekulow may not have any idea what the special counsel is up to. But clearly, if you're interviewing intelligence officials about what the president said to you about the Russia investigation and whether he encouraged you, and you in this case would be the NSA director, Michael Rogers, or the director of national intelligence, Director Coates, if that is the line of questioning, then clearly the president's actions are being investigated here. That's what special counsel is there to do. And the fact that the investigation has got on this in this direction clearly would suggest that the president is conduct is a big part of the investigation.
That makes logical sense. Under what circumstances does a special counsel or any prosecutor actually notify somebody in the formal sense that Sekulow was trying to indicate that they are under investigation. Where is that line? Do you know?
Yeah, there is no. I mean, look, there's Department of Justice guidelines, but I mean, generally, it is not required that when an investigation begins for the potential subject or target to be notified. It is practice and standard practice that when an indictment is imminent, the subject or the target will get a target letter, and then the target's lawyer can go to the special counsel in this case, or in a standard investigation would go to the deputy attorney general or the head of the criminal division and try to present arguments about why such an indictment would be misguided and misplaced. But we're clearly far away from that. So there's no particular reason that the president's counsel would be notified at this point.
And listeners, we can take your phone calls for Michael Isikoff, chief investigative correspondent for Yahoo News. Your questions and observations, welcome here. What can Michael Isikoff clarify for you that you might find confusing about the Trump and Russia investigations at this point? Or what part do you have a comment on? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. You know, I can understand Trump's frustration on one level. I mean, listeners, if we can remove our feelings about Trump in general for a minute and imagine if you were in this position. The FBI director tells you three times that you are not under investigation, but neither he nor the other top intelligence officials who Michael just referenced are willing to say that publicly. So the media keeps treating you like you're under investigation. Then, as Friday's tweet suggested, you've got a deputy attorney general who you appointed, Rod Rosenstein, who wrote a letter outlining reasons that Comey deserves to be fired. Then Rosenstein appoints a special counsel to investigate you for firing him. Can you see why anyone, even not named Donald Trump, would feel victimized by these circumstances? Michael, can you?
Well, look, except for the fact that the reason the special counsel is pursuing this line of inquiry is because of Trump's own actions and Trump's own statements after James Comey had told him he was not under investigation as part of the original focus of the inquiry, which was a counterintelligence probe to see whether there was any association between people in the Trump camp and the Russians in their meddling in the election. But after that, Trump, then concerned because that investigation has zeroed in on one of his top associates, his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, first urges Comey to see if there was a way he can let this go. I hope you can let this go, mm-hmm. he says. And then when Comey does not give him that assurance, he fires Comey. And then after the White House initially says he was acting upon the recommendation of Rod Rosenstein and the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, immediately contradicts that by telling Lester Holt, in fact, he fired him because of the Russia investigation. And then it's discovered that not only did his efforts to terminate the Flynn investigation extend to went beyond what he said to Comey, but also he made comments to the National Security Agency chief, Rogers, and the Director of National Intelligence, Coates, that then put his actions under scrutiny. So it was Trump's own actions after the assurances he got from Comey that triggered this investigation.
And I think
that complicated, really.
Right. And I think we've seen this movie before. Nixon wasn't under investigation for the Watergate burglary itself, but became under investigation for his involvement in covering it up. And Clinton was impeached by the House for lying under oath, even though the Paula Jones lawsuit he was under oath for had been dismissed.
Actually, yes. And the second article of impeachment against Clinton was obstructing justice in the Paula Jones lawsuit, which, as you correctly point out, at that point had been dismissed. So, you know, it is not necessary to find that there's an underlying crime here in terms of the Flynn Flynn matter, and we're a long way of knowing how that's going to play out at this point, whether it's going to lead to criminal charges or not. But if the president, for a corrupt purpose, the corrupt purpose being trying to shield himself from any political fallout or embarrassment in the Flynn investigation, tries to shut that investigation down, he could potentially be accused of obstructing justice, and that's what's going on here. It's all going to depend on the facts. What exactly did he say to Rogers? What exactly did he say to Coates? There's a memo which has been reported by Richard Ledgett, the deputy NSA director, about the phone call that the president made to Mike Rogers, Ledgett's boss. What did that memo say? We haven't seen it. So all of these, you know, these things are very fact specific. There's a lot more that we need to know in order to reach final conclusions on this. But clearly there's enough here to make it clear that this is a line of inquiry that that Bob Mueller is pursuing. And I should point out that Rod Rosenstein, the guy who Mueller reports to, has already made that clear, because on several occasions, starting with when he briefed the House on this investigation, he declined to answer questions about his own conversations with Trump and what he knew about the circumstances of Comey's findings, because he told the House this was an area that might be of interest to the special counsel.
So this brings me to another scenario that I want to ask you about. I read that Rod Rosenstein might be the next to recuse himself from overseeing the investigation, Mueller reports to him, because he did write that memo justifying Comey's firing, and now the firing is a subject of the investigation. Do you anticipate he will recuse, or do you have an opinion about whether he should? It seems to me that might be the real point of Trump's tweet on Friday, which attacked Rosenstein, to further force Rosenstein into a corner where he will recuse himself or prepare the public for Trump firing Rosenstein even. Does it look like any of that to you?
Well, look, I think that Rosenstein's decision on recusal will be governed more by the direction of Mueller's investigation than it will be by Donald Trump's tweets. And it would be hard for me to see if Mueller further pursues this line of inquiry and does bore into the investigation of the circumstances surrounding Comey's firing, it would be hard to see how Rosenstein cannot recuse himself, because he was part, he is clearly a witness to the events surrounding that. He talked to the president. He wrote the memo. He knows what the president said to him. That will be compared with what the White House said publicly and what the president said publicly. So, yeah, I think there's a good chance Rosenstein will recuse himself. But, you know, what was so misplaced about Trump's tweet is Rosenstein is not doing this investigation. Mueller is doing the investigation. That was the whole point of appointing a special counsel. The special counsel is supposed to operate per his or her own discretion as to what should be done. Ultimately, because there's no independent counsel statute, he has to report to the deputy attorney general, and the deputy, because the attorney general is already recused on this, that's Jeff Sessions. Right. But it's not Rosenstein calling the shots on this investigation. It's not Rosenstein who's in the weeds saying, interview this person, interview that person.
Yes.
It's Mueller's call, and Mueller has, per the regulations, full independence to conduct this investigation as he sees fit.
Except with rumors going around last week that Trump is looking for a way to fire Mueller, or might be. Rosenstein is the only person who could actually fire Mueller, and at the moment, Mueller has the full faith of Rosenstein. So this brings a new name into the spotlight, and I want to ask you about this potentially intriguing scenario. If Rosenstein recuses, as you say he almost inevitably will, the next in line is Associate Attorney General Rachel Lee Brand. who I gather has a background in conservative and Republican politics, but little prosecutorial experience. She's a member of the Federalist Society, I heard, the ideologically conservative membership organization for judges and lawyers. Do you know of Rachel Lee Brand enough to have an opinion on whether she'd be at all likely to stifle the investigation on the president's behalf, acting as kind of a political operative in a way that Rosenstein isn't, if Rosenstein were to leave and she were to rise to that position?
Look, I know Rachel Brand. I've known her for years, not particularly well, but she was in the Justice Department, the head of the Office of Legal Policy during the George W. Bush administration. It is true she's a conservative Republican lawyer, but she's also a professional. She's sort of knows the ropes, knows the rules. I'd be surprised if she were going to make any effort to tube the investigation. And I'm not sure she could. I mean, what, you know, the scenario could be that could play out here is Rosenstein recused, Brand then becomes the person that Mueller reports to ultimately. But that doesn't put her in any real sense in charge of the investigation any more than Rosenstein is in charge of the investigation. The question that you're really posing here is, if Trump decides he wants to fire Mueller, would Brand do it? And I don't know the answer to that. She, you know, is presumably loyal to the Trump agenda. She accepted the job of a top position in the Trump Justice Department. But whether she would accept an order to fire a special counsel, I don't know. That would be a risky move. She may not. And then it would call, and the president would have to find somebody else in the Justice Department who would do the work. But it is worth noting, by the way, there is a concerted attack by the president's lawyers and his surrogates on Mueller right now. I don't know if you caught it, but Dave Bossi, who was the deputy Trump campaign manager, was on Fox News yesterday talking about the long-standing relationship between James Comey, who's clearly at the center of this investigation, the guy that was fired, and Mueller. Mm-hmm. They go back years. Mueller was Comey's predecessor as FBI director. So they're clearly laying the groundwork to undermine Mueller as the special counsel. Now, does that add up to the president will fire Mueller? You know, I think that's ultimately a political calculation that the president and his advisors will have to make, because they have to worry about the almost inevitable uproar in Congress that will result from such a firing, and how many Republicans may defect if such an action were taken. But they're clearly holding that in reserve. And at the end of the day, it's Donald Trump, so who knows what he's going to do?
Michael Isikoff with us, chief investigative correspondent for Yahoo News, 212-433-WNYC. And Russ in Princeton Junction, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. When Comey testified, he alluded, caught everybody's attention, that Sessions had to recuse himself, not only because of the hello?
Yes.
Because of the two meetings with Russian officials, but some mysterious third thing. And then when General Sessions testified in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Wyden went after him pretty relentlessly and said, you know, what was the third thing that Comey was alluding to? And Sessions seemed genuinely like, you tell me what the third thing was. And I have never heard any leaks. Wyden would have heard in closed testimony, I assume, that Comey had after the public hearing, what this third thing was. Is there any information at all, any hints about
Well,
you know,
I think actually it kind of came out at that Sessions testimony that the third thing was the encounter, meeting might be too strong if Sessions is to be believed, between him and the Russian ambassador at this Trump campaign event in April of last year at the Mayflower Hotel. And Michael, I wonder what you made of that, because certainly Comey did raise a lot of eyebrows around the country by saying Sessions had to recuse himself because of things that even weren't revealed, not just the two meetings that were known, as the caller said. But then what Sessions seemed to say about the meeting at the Mayflower was that it wasn't really a meeting. Yeah, he was there, and Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, was there, and maybe they had a hello in passing. He doesn't even remember. But, you know, it's absurd to think at an event with hundreds of people that the two of them would have somehow been colluding on how to hack the election. So what do you make of all
right.
that?
Right. No, I mean, that's basically it. Everybody assumed that what Comey was referring to was the so-called third encounter at the Mayflower Hotel. Now, yes, there were hundreds of people at the event, which was the speech that Trump gave in April of 2016. But there was a private reception that was smaller, a couple of dozen people. Kislyak, the Russian ambassador, was there, as was Jeff Sessions and President Trump himself at one point. Sessions kind of he gave a couple of different answers, made it clear that there was no meeting per se. They didn't go behind closed doors and sit down and talk. But he, you know, when pressed on whether there was an encounter of some time, whether he exchanged words with Kislyak, he said he did not recall whether that happened or not. Now, this is believed to be driven by intelligence reports that indicate Kislyak reported back some sort of encounter conversation with Sessions relating to potential policy moves by a Trump administration if Trump were to get elected. And that's what drove this. Now, was Kislyak hyping what took place? That may well be the case. Was there more to it than Sessions recalls? That could conceivably be the case too. But right now, we'd have to say that the case is certainly not proven that there was any third meeting or encounter that was substantive that would that would undermine Sessions' previous testimony.
And as far as we know, that Mayflower Hotel meeting that you were just talking about is the instance, or the only instance, that Comey was referring to in that mysterious reference in his testimony, some other reason that Sessions would have had to recuse himself?
That's all we know about. Nothing else has surfaced. There's been no hint of any other encounter, discussion, or event.
Sharon in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Sharon.
Hi. I sort of wanted to bring this back more to the original issue of what Russia did during the investigation and whether there was any sort of collusion with the Trump campaign. I remember during the course of the campaign some news coverage about some sort of electronic pings between sources in Russia and Trump Tower, where they were getting responses, electronic responses from Trump Tower. What exactly was that, and why don't we hear anything else about it?
There were reports of that. There was a lot of speculation about that, and some of the folks in Democratic Party circles in the Hillary Clinton campaign were sort of pushing that story. But I have to say, nothing hard has been proven on that. It's not clear whether those pings were spam traffic or any substantive communications between Trump Tower and the Kremlin. I haven't seen anything that nails that down anywhere near conclusive.
Sharon, thank you. Susan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Yes, hi. I remember from the campaign that at one point Trump kind of looked at the microphone and said, Russia, if you're listening, look for these 30,000 emails. And everybody thought he was just joking. And we now know that there's a lot of Russia connection, and we know that some of his stuff isn't joking at all. And I haven't heard anybody, including this, in was there collusion between Trump himself and Russia during the campaign?
Yes, we've played that clip many times. And so, Michael, I'll ask you. We could call it up again. We have that in last week's clip file. If you want to, I'm talking to my engineer now. If you want to find that, I think that we had it for Thursday or Friday as the final clip on that clip sheet. I'm just telling my engineer. but I think a lot of our listeners know that moment at some point in the campaign.
Sure.
When Trump just did say at a campaign appearance, "Russia, if you're listening," this was after the first reported. Well, here it is. Let's listen.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press.
So that was after the first indications that Russia had been hacking Democratic Party emails. And so he said that. So the caller's question is, why isn't that evidence of collusion in and of itself that would bring down whatever punishment collusion would bring?
Yeah, well, look, it's public collusion, right? It's not private collusion. It's not secret. There he was saying it as openly as he possibly could. And I guess, you know, people in the defenders of Donald Trump will say, well, you know, the public knew all about this. They heard it and they elected the guy. He won the election. It's not inconceivable that if there's ever charges brought along the lines of collusion, that that clip will be played, will be cited. But it's hard to make the case that this is part of some secret conspiracy since it was so blatantly in the open.
So if the president did not secretly collude with the Russians, could he legally be accused of covering up something that he either didn't do or didn't do in secret, covering up a crime he didn't commit? That would be pretty Orwellian, or is that the wrong way to look at it?
Well, look, I mean, you know, as I said before, he can be accused of obstructing justice to shut down an investigation into what happened, regardless of what the results of the investigation are. It's certainly a possibility. But you know, look, so much of this has been driven, as I said before, by Trump's own actions. The firing of Comey after the effort to shut down the Flynn investigation, the interference that he apparently seemed to encourage from others in the intelligence community, all that is fodder for the special counsel. But I think that ultimately the public is going to want to know, was there more to the collusion with Russia than what Trump said publicly? We're going to have to wait a while to get the answer to that.
I guess so. We just have a few minutes left. I'm curious what you make of Mike Pence getting an outside lawyer the other day. He's mostly portrayed as a victim of Michael Flynn lying to him about contacts with Russia. Is Pence vulnerable on things that have gotten less press?
Pence is a very clearly a potential witness, because if at the core of the investigation is Mike Flynn and his actions and his conversations with the Russian ambassador on December 29th and his misrepresentations to Pence and others inside the White House, Pence becomes a witness to that. But, you know, this could get very sticky, because as I think I've made with you before, I mean, we know that Flynn is being investigated for all this. And Comey pretty much confirmed that during his testimony, that, you know, that the FBI interviewed him after the December 29th conversation. And part of the investigation was whether he lied to the FBI or misrepresented facts to the FBI. What we don't know is what Flynn told the president. before his conversation with Kislyak and after his conversation with Kislyak. And then adding to that is, if the president was briefed on those conversations, was the president party to what Flynn told Mike Pence?
Right.
Was Flynn and the president misrepresenting the facts to Mike Pence? Mike Pence is clearly a witness to all that.
So last thing for today, and kind of to that point, a tweet from a listener here says, Isikoff wrong. It is collusion because he was secretly negotiating to lift sanctions in exchange. Huh. Now, in a way, that might be right, because if what we know about the Flynn firing is that the exchange that he lied about was that he did talk about sanctions with the Russians, and if that intelligence report from the Mayflower Hotel encounter with Sessions indicated that that might be about lifting sanctions, the collusion could be even a sort of tacit, go ahead, keep doing whatever dirty stuff you're doing to hack the election, and that'll help us, and if it works out, we'll lift some sanctions.
Very quickly, as I reported a couple of weeks ago, the Trump administration moved very quickly right after the election to explore the lifting of sanctions. That is part of the record here. The only thing I could say on the other side is I'm not so sure it was as secret as some people, want to present, because Trump had said repeatedly throughout the election he wanted to improve relations with Russia. Clearly, sanctions were a huge irritant in U.S.-Russia relations. So it wasn't a big leap to imagine that he would move in this direction. I think it's going to take more than his public comments to make the case that there was a secret conspiracy here. Doesn't mean there wasn't. We got to know what the substance of those conversations were. But, a lot of this, as I say, so much of this is hiding in plain sight.
And later in the program, we'll talk to Carla Robbins from the Council on Foreign Relations on why the Trump administration wants to lift sanctions on Russia while reimposing them on Cuba. That'll be in about a half hour. For now, we thank Michael Isikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News. Mike, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Amazon acquires Whole Foods. Huh?